sort of housekeeping notes from the writer's house. Sorry, I'm really stressed out because I'm American and tonight's our election night. And then, I feel like I'm confused. Alright, so we have two more events this term. Comedy Collaboration Blur is our next event. That will be on the 14th of November in the Blue Room of St. Aldate's Tavern. We have the ex-head of BBC Radio Comedy coming, and she'll be in conversation with John Osborne, and they'll be talking about what it looks like to start a radio career. So if anybody's interested in radio writing, that will be fun. And then we have Words for Winter, which is the 28th of November. We're going to have Mulled Wine, and that's going to be a showcase of writers across Oxford. Some of them are poets and some of them are storytellers, and that's a kind of community event for you to come and meet other writers who are working in different disciplines. It will be a bigger event, and I think we'll be holding it at City Hall, so it's exciting. So, Polly Stenham is a playwright. She came to fame age 19 with her play That Face, which premiered at the Royal Court. Since then, she has written several more plays, opened an art gallery, is adapting her first two plays for screen, and has recently co-written a screenplay, Neon Demon, for director Nichols Winding Renf, is that right?
I think it's like Vanden Reffen.
Reffen?
Doesn't work.
Alright. She has won the Evening Standard's Charles Winter Award, the Critics Award for Most Promising Playwright, and the Theatrical Management Associated Award for Best New Play. I'm going to probably duck out in a minute and grab her some coffee. But as I said, this is a question and answer event, so you're really here in conversation. And I thought I would just open it immediately to questions about playwriting, or her experience with playwriting.
Go, hello.
Why did you start writing?
Why?
Yeah.
I suppose that's kind of a complicated question, because, I mean, writing plays or writing generally?
Which did you do first?
I think I really wanted to be a novelist. I was really, from like a young age, I'm sure a lot of people in this room have that similar, like, childhood thing. I was very certain that it would be writing. But I love the theatre, and I went a huge amount when I was younger, but I never connected the dots, weirdly. I didn't really think it was an option to love writing and love the theatre, and I know, write for the theatre. But That Face was the first play I'd ever written. So that's, I was 19 when I started writing plays, but I wrote all sorts of crap poetry and stuff like that from a young age. But why rather than when? Was that the question, why?
Yeah, just what kind of inspired you to write that play?
I did the Royal Court's Young Writers Scheme, which I highly recommend to anyone. I think it's just brilliant. And you did little exercises, you sort of talked in groups, you read plays, you didn't really write anything that long form, but what it did was sort of, it made me aware that it was possible. It kind of gave me some confidence, I think. I sort of, before, you know, you can see a play, it's quite abstract, it seems quite weird, I think, to write dialogue like that. It feels quite unnatural. And I think being around other people, I'm quite competitive, and I could tell that, like, other people might be into this. And I suddenly sort of, and it was a really split decision. I didn't have like the story in my head. It wasn't like, oh, one day I'm gonna write this play about his mother and her son. And it just sort of, I remember writing down Henry, one of the characters, on a bit of paper. And I was in my friend's, like, Goldsmiths University library at her university for some reason. I just remember thinking, I could do this. Should I just give it a go? Because what I think was so instrumental in it was the Royal Court said at the end of this course, if you write something, any of you here, we will read it. And they read all submissions. It's part of their ethics as a, such a sort of, they prioritise new writing completely. It's their tradition. It's why they were founded, I suppose. So I think knowing that someone would read it made it feel a bit less like screaming in an empty room. So maybe in retrospect, I can see perhaps the sense that I knew that someone somewhere would be a reader, even if nothing else happened. Probably galvanised me. I don't think if that person hadn't said that, or if I'd skived that session or whatever, I don't think like my whole career would have happened, actually. It's mad how, like, sliding doors that stuff is.
Sure. Was it weird or hard writing dialogue, and how did you get over that, if it was?
I think that for me, I find dialogue quite musical. And it feels quite instinctive, I suppose. Like, it's quite... I found it weird at first, and that's what the course kind of broke down. But once I had done a few little scraps of things in the course that didn't matter, and it wasn't long form, by then it didn't feel weird, and then I could kind of hear it. Because there's like a... Because I suppose I write like naturalistic dialogue rather than realistic dialogue. So it's not as sort of... I suppose realistic dialogue's more like the ums and the ahs and all the real stutterings and repetitions and crap that's in that actual speech. And that's, I think, a really hard skill to be able to write that, because it's very technical. But I think with naturalistic dialogue, it's that little polish. It's kind of how we wish we all spoke. Like, there's an internal rhythm and there's maybe a bit of a flourish here and there, but it could be real if everyone was a bit better. Do you know what I mean? And that, I think, I'm conscious of internal rhymes, and like, I often write beats, which people find really confusing when they read my plays if they don't know what it is. Because someone once told me they had read the whole of my play imagining that it was like someone just beating a drum. I was like, oh, what did you think it was? Like, and they were like, just love the drum bit. I was like, but I find that really helpful, just like this beat of time. And that's because it is just, there's a rhythm. Like, it just, the slightest gap can really change how something, what something means, I think, or sounds like. Yes?
How do you negotiate writing a play that's crafted enough to have kind of aesthetics and kind of be interesting and engaging, but without it being too crafted in the sense of kind of it still being kind of human?
Oh my God, that's such a good question. I think that literally in that question, that I think that's the skill. You've got to somehow maintain. And then there's all the industry crap that you end up having to deal with as you get older and more involved in it all, the pressure. But I think when you're... Oh, amazing. What someone once told me, and this could be a lie, but I've always remembered it, that the right bit of playwright means craft. And I think that, like, there's an architecture, there has to be, I think, an architecture to a good play that is actually quite technical, because ultimately, at the end of the day, you're going to have lighting designers lighting it, poor actors getting up to do it every night, there's this whole mad little industry that happens while it's on. It's, like, got to be sturdy. It's got to be able to hold all these other people. It's the ship you've built. And that requires a degree of enormous, it's a really skillful thing, and it's hard, and I find structure really horrible. I hate it, just hate it. The human stuff's great, that's fun, but like the just, and then, you know, the decisions whether you do sort of a Chekhovian four acts continuous time and all that. I mean, that's like playing chess with a panther. I mean, it's really complicated, but satisfying, I suppose. But I think it's finding that balance between sort of integrity of structure, because too human, and if you're having too much fun writing it, I think sometimes it does end up not being very good, because it's a bit, you know, sort of, I don't know, it can get indulgent in a way, having to keep an eye on, I think, the structural aspects of it, which are very, very rigorous and you can't fool yourself about them, I think maybe checks any indulgence. But I think my favourite plays certainly have a deep humanity and a lot of sort of soul. Did any of you see Jerusalem? Amazing play. I think one of the best plays of the last 30 years. Brilliant play. I think I saw that like four times. That's a very good example, I think, of something that has such soul, such comedy, such character, such poetry and integrity in that way. But it's also, although it doesn't look it, is structurally incredible. It's really clever. It's like this freestanding thing. So yeah, I think I wish I knew entirely how to do that, but that's the battle.
Do you have tips on like how you develop a narrative, like moving from like just crafting bits of dialogue to like slotting that into like an actual story? Like, how does it come to you as a story?
I think it's kind of varied for me. I'm writing my fifth play at the moment, and I've written some screenplays, but that's different. That's like a whole another thing, I think. It's really different art. It's been quite different for me, like what comes first. Like my third play felt really, really character. It was about this kind of boy, and that's I kind of crafted and engineered the story from this very angry, very grieving, quite sort of druggy kind of character that seemed very real to me, was really alive, and he sort of walked into my head, and it was about finding a home and a story for him and things for him to play with and achieve and do. But that took 4 years, because that's a harder way, but longer way, I think, of doing it. And then my play afterwards, I suddenly had the idea for the plot, and then the characters came after. So I think it depends. I find just on a really like stupid practical level, I'm quite dyslexic, and I've painted in my studio, I've got like, but just black. It's not even actual blackboard paint, I think it's just black paint. And I get white index cards, and because I hate structure and I need to kind of treat myself like a dyslexic 9-year-old, I have like kind of bent, and I sometimes you can be too close to it, and I think I can sort of, if I put things on cards and kind of move it all around, a shape starts to emerge. But actually, I think probably, in a way, the method it always ends up being is you just write a draft, and it's kind of horrible, and you hate most of it, but there's like one or two kind of great bits in it, and you're like, ooh, and then you keep those one or two bits, and you write another draft, and then most of it's horrible, but there's maybe another good bit. And you just sort of keep doing that until you've got all good bits, and it's really stressful. But I think on a kind of practical level, that is, I can waffle on as much about character, but essentially that's what ends up happening. You just keep going. I think it's very important, no matter how much you hate it, to start the draft and finish the draft, no matter what. I think you've got to be bad to be good sometimes. And that's being able to stay in that like when you're like, oh God, this is so embarrassing. Like I had a reading of my play last night at the Almeida. It was awful, really awful. And all day I've had to be like, you've had bad readings before, you've had bad dress rehearsals before. It doesn't actually mean anything about the thing. You've got to like, sometimes it has to be bad, yeah, to get to somewhere good later. And it's not freaking out. Not in a way having the vanity to freak out. Is, I think, really, really key. Sorry, I went a bit off topic there.
When you're creating a character, do you have a clear image of them in your head when you're creating them, and how do you reconcile that with casting, if they're not looking how you imagine?
Casting's funny. Casting's really fun, though, as well. I mean, like, it's definitely one of the funner bits of it. I have a lot of actor friends now from kind of being in the industry for a bit, and you'd never say this to them. But unless someone really surprises you, there is definitely a thing where you're like, you just sort of are that person. But then in my first play, Matt Smith played Henry, the boy in my first play, and this was actually interesting. I really had in my head, I was like, I want him to be this like fey little kind of sort of beautiful sort of Eddie Redmayne kind of, but younger and just like amazing. And I was really insistent on this. I was like, I don't understand why we're doing the reading with Matt. Because Matt is quite a big guy, actually. Well, certainly bigger than I imagined, and more like blokey than I imagined. And the theatre were like, trust me. And then we cast Lindsay Duncan as his mum, who was quite kind of fragile and ethereal looking. And the dynamic of him being bigger and her being smaller, so much better. Because it suddenly became much weirder that they were like sharing a bed and stuff. So, in that instance, I was totally wrong, and they were right. So it's hard, you know, I think it's really good to stick with your instincts but on it, and not be too compromising, but also not be too rigid type thing. You just sort of know, I think, as well.
What do you consider to be the important differences between screenwriting and playwriting?
Oh God. Well, when I got permission to adapt my second play into film, for film 4, And I literally was so naive. I was like, piece of piss, can't believe it, I made so much money, this is great. And I literally took the play, and because obviously screenplays are in a different format, you know, you've got, you know, interior, exterior, all that kind of stuff. And I write my plays on words, so they look, I was like, well, they just look different. What a jape. It's a question of fonts. And I was literally sniggering to myself as I kind of just copied and pasted, added a few interiors, exteriors, sent it off to film for like, Quentin. And they were like, you don't understand this at all. I was like, what do you mean? They were like, you don't understand the language of cinema, clearly. I was like, I don't think I do. I grew up watching, I mean, I adore cinema, and I'm much more interested in it now, but I had to, I think, learn the language more than I had to learn playwriting language. So, I mean, the difference is, screenwriting is a visual medium, really. It's like, ultimately, the kinetic, the thing that carries you through is picture. Play is the reason why they're published, why they exist as pieces of literature. What carries you through are the words. Also, what is complicated and it's very different, the experience of being a playwright or a screenwriter. Being a screenwriter, get paid an enormous amount more. And I think every playwright does definitely need to do some screenwriting. But as a screenwriter, you are very, very low down the chain. You can be sacked off your own films, you can be rehired. I mean, most films have sort of between 2 and 11 people writing them. The director and the producers and the actors are all far above you. And it's you're a hack for hire, really, unless you're the writer-director. And I was told this by some very cynical screenwriters when I was, I think, like 22, and I didn't really believe it. But then when I sort of did a bit of this Neon Demon film, that was all kind of Hollywood and everything, I was like, oh my God, it's true. And so I think you've got to be, I think, personality-wise, that you've got to be all right with people really messing around with it. It's not really, unless you're directing, it's not yours. A play is yours. Like, I mean, we're the country of Shakespeare. Like, we're quite a writer-centric theatre industry. Like, we're the only country in the world where the writers have the legal right to attend their own rehearsals. It's very, and some theatres more than others, but we very much celebrate. I mean, that's the reason why, you know, it's the writer's name on the poster. It's the, you know, I mean, you can name a lot of screenwriters that have worked on some of the best films. It is completely different. And I think I for a while thought it was much more similar, and I learned very quickly that it isn't. Yeah, I think that's the primary difference. They're both words, and they're both stories, and they're both live arts to a degree, but actually they're very different skills. You know.
Do you find writing dialogue different for plays versus cinema?
Yeah. Well, you can't. Like, has anyone seen the film of Closer? I'm by no means dissing this, because the writer's a friend of mine, that would be really rude, and it's a great, great play. It's an awesome play. He didn't really change it at all. He did, I'm sure, some interior and exterior and, you know, some sort of sexy locations, but he didn't really change it that much. And I think you can really tell it was a play. It still works really well, the film, because they're all really sexy and the play's great, but you sort of know that it's a play adaptation, I think, of a film. Because on stage you can get away with this slightly, you know, that speech, there's a great speech in it, and it's like, blood, the heart's like a fist, there's some really amazing kind of, and like, I mean, really, when you have the actual sort of forensic detail of a camera on somebody saying that, it didn't feel quite real, it's quite truthful. But you can get super, super heightened films with heightened language. I don't know if I'm explaining this well. I think you have to tone it down. It's what I was saying before, I guess. It's not the main muscle of telling the story in theatre. The words are, so you can go a bit further with them and sort of riff a bit more. But because it's visual, I think you need to pull it, but it's second fiddle, as it were. And I think you have to be aware of that. But then that is, could be taste, I don't know. It's quite subjective.
How do you balance kind of writing for yourself and enjoying it, and also pleasing an audience or pleasing critics?
Really, another really good question. I'm also in quite a reflective mood about all of this because of my reading last night. I was on the train like, do I like this? What's this about? Is it time? I don't know. I've been thinking about it a lot today, all of it, how you do that and how you do with directors and blah. I think that you know yourself when it's good, and if you enjoy it, it's good on some level, and that's what matters, is you, that you think it's a good play, regardless of the fact you've done it. And I think, but then it's interesting, I mean, I find when you put your play up in front of an audience, like some of the stuff I think is hilarious in my work, like no one finds funny at all. And some of the stuff that I thought was like not even a joke, people go mad for, and you're like, you really can't predict when that's gonna happen, and it's really weird. It's a real kind of death of the author moment, because you're like, this just lives. And also people coming out of your plays being like, telling you that it's quite clearly about like Thatcherite politics, and you're like, what? It's like three kids in a flat, and their mum's missing. It's like, it's about fear of the state, that's why they don't want to get found. And you're like, there's a lot of that kind of thing. So you can't really, I have sort of, this is probably really cringe and embarrassing to admit, but I have like some little like mantras I say to myself when I'm like finding all of it intense. And one of them's like, be truthful and not to be vain. And I think if you follow those tenets a little bit, it keeps you safe. It keeps you from trying to please people too much, and it keeps you from overindulging too much. Because like, I think vanity, like slightly vain writing, which I'm extremely capable of, is like, that is when you're trying to please other people. It's like when you're getting a little, like, oh, well, I could write that joke, oh, showboat that a little bit, like, oh. And like, that's like, you can smell it. It's not serving the story, it's not essential. It's like, and you can just, it might be a good, might be a lovely piece of writing, it might be great, but it kind of lowers the tone of the whole thing because you're not, you're being vain. And I think, and the being truthful as well is that sort of, again, it's not trying to please you, it's this is what would really happen next. If that makes sense. But I read a really interesting thing, that's it, David Foster Wallace, The Infinite Jest, is that him? I read an extract of something he said recently, which I thought was so wonderful, about how he thought good art was about what was behind it, that talent was sort of here or there, that talent wasn't what made it good art, that what good art was about the intention behind it, and that it needed to, and the intention is in all ways is in some way about love, but when it's writing that wants to be loved, that's when it's maybe not good, which is to a degree when I was talking about vanity and trying to please people. But when it's writing that is trying to love, trying to show, trying to give, that isn't worried about how it's received, that's really good art. And I just thought that was amazing. I've been really thinking about it. Sorry, that was a really long-winded answer.
Oh, no.
Picking up a little on the point of you wrote something that you thought funny and nobody else did. How do you kind of regulate yourself on, I don't know, if you think that something is good, how are you sure that that piece of work is good? And then whose opinion do you kind of take when somebody else thinks, oh, I thought it was about that, and then kind of, what authority do you go with?
This is literally my nightmare last night, like 100%. And I just think that's never, no matter how much experience I have or whatever, I just think that's always going to be really tricky. Because it's sort, I think you've got to be careful about whose advice you take. I really don't show my stuff to many people. I made that mistake. Like, some people get great support from showing their friends and exchanging their works like that. I found that on some level, if I was honest with myself, all I really wanted my friend to say was like, you're a genius. And that was actually on some level, if I was really brutally honest with myself, all that was really acceptable, and anything less than that was going to upset me. Obviously they weren't going to say I was a genius, so consequently I just felt a bit resentful with whatever was said, which was ridiculous, But I seemed to get myself in this bind, and I was like, actually, and a new thing is so like slippery and slithery and like covered in stuff. It's like so newborn, early work, and it can't take too harsh a light, I don't think, even with the best intentions. So I think you have to protect the work and yourself and only let people in that you really, really trust at the right time. But you know, last night I had a reading, a draft that I literally have killed myself over. Worked so hard, was like, go me, I've made such a breakthrough with this one, this is going to be brilliant. I had a great cast for the reading, I was like excited about the reading, I was all like, just going to say, it's been such a ball ache, I've been working on this thing for 2 years, I'm going to like, sit down, and they're just going to read it, and it's just going to be great, like the sexual tension between the characters, people are going to be really just like into this, it's going to be great. Sat down, and the artistic director and the associate director hadn't read the new draft, which really didn't help. I rapidly realised that two of the actors were playing the characters really not how I imagined, and that they're so delicate plays that I'd really thrown the whole thing, and it was just this nightmare that was sort of unravelling in front of me. It was like the absolute opposite of what I thought it was going to be like. And then I realised they weren't really going to read in the stage directions, and that pretty much the entire play doesn't make sense unless you hear all the stage directions. So the whole thing was a car crash. And I had been very confident in it. So I'm dealing with a really bruised ego today. But I think that you kind of got to, I don't know, would... It's got to basically not, unfortunately, it's kind of got to not matter what people think. It's got to be sort of joyful, and obviously that's this, a massive, massive, massive battle. But yeah, I think surround yourself with people you trust. Only show it to people when it's totally can take the scrutiny and it's not too sort of slippery and new. And people always have different opinions on stuff. But I think it's healthy to also have a bit of sort of fuck you about it. You don't like it. I mean, my fourth play, I had a lot of people walk out because it was super violent and there was like machine guns and stuff in it, and some people getting nosebleeds and people leaving, and a lot of people hated that play. I found that quite exciting. But luckily, sort of half of them really liked it, so it was like, it feels fun to be divisive. Probably it would have felt pretty awful if everyone had left. But I'm sure that'll happen. Like, I'm sure. One day. So yeah, don't worry too much about what people think, I guess.
How's doing, like, the way you do the writing changed as you got older and how? Has it got easier or harder?
It's definitely changed because I'm sort of 10 years in now. I think I was writing from a very like unconscious place initially, and so my work was, I think, you know, I mean, my first play, which is still my most successful, annoyingly, is I wrote very quickly, and it, you know, but there's that saying, isn't there, that you have your like all your life to really write your first one. So it was just, I don't know, it just sort of happened. I look back at that and I'm like, you have no idea how rare an experience that was. You were having no idea how hard it was going to get. So I think, and the second was really, I wrote a really crap, kind of impossible to stage kind of idea between the first and the second. And the second ended up being a very simple reaction to the fact that that was unstageable. Now I research more. Definitely. I have a researcher who helps me sometimes. I structure more. I find as I've got older, I find structure really difficult, and so consequently I've got kind of more interested in it and sort of set myself harder challenges, even though I kind of hate it, but you're sort of drawn to that, I guess. I try and be more aware now I'm older that like I'm... I think when you get to the fourth/fifth play, you sort of, there's an element where you can not relax ever, but like, I think for the first one or two or three, it's all a bit like play X Factor. You're like, oh, will it go on? Because it just might not. But I think once you get a bit more established and you're pretty confident, they probably will go on somewhere. It doesn't really matter, you know, like whatever. Like, it doesn't have to be the biggest theatre or most prestigious in the world, but someone will probably do it. you sort of, that kind of adrenaline goes, and I think that that changes the writing, and you've got to sort of, it doesn't go. But I think I've started to realise that, like, I'm 30 now, I've been doing this for 10 years, like, I'm in it, I'm realistically, this is probably going to be at least one aspect of my career, probably for most of the rest of my life. So I think I try now to not, to protect it and not to burn out, to not, like, sort of bank it too hard, as it were, to, like, try and, like, you know, like, read books and look at art and listen to music and, like, be more aware that you've got to keep that sort of, like, childlike kind of creativity. You've got to look after that, because if you don't, I think that does go and you get jaded and horrible and miserable. So, yeah, sorry, did that answer it?
You mentioned earlier that you originally wanted to be a novelist.
Mm.
Do you think you ever write a novel or ever move to a different genre?
I'd really love to write a novel. It's weird, when you've been writing dialogue for a decade, like, my prose is so crap now, because I've been not practicing it really at all. And, like, so my, like, I tried to write some prose the other day and it was all really rhythmic and weird. So I think I'd love to one day. I'd really love to. But again, I mean, I've got some novelist friends now, and my God, in terms of, like, long form and lonely, and so great about plays, writing plays, is you get to straddle two worlds, which I had no idea when I got into it, but turned out to be brilliant, is that you get to straddle the kind of, like, Faber and, like, having a publisher and, like, being a kind of writer and being quite sort of serious, and that's quite nice, and it's all, like, feels quite, like, solid, and you're like, yeah. And then also just kind of, like, kind of show business, in a way. You've kind of got your foot in, like, all the actors and the kind of, like, the bar afterwards and that kind of, you know, there's, you get both, and you get the, you get to see it, witness it be enjoyed, and you get that kind of rush and the spectacle, and I think it must be so hard as a novelist to work on something so solo for, you know, 10 years. And then there's, like, the publisher's party and some interviews and maybe a bit of a tour or whatever. And then, like, I don't know, you just maybe see someone read it on the tube and you're just like, like, I don't know if that would be enough. Like, I think as I've got older, I think I'm actually quite suited to the playwriting stuff, because I think I need that release, that, like, oh, it's on, and we're, like, running around South Bank afterwards and it's great, and that's happened. It's like a thing. And there's other people, and you're not, you become, the play becomes less and less your responsibility, and you have this company and you're part of a company, and you're, like, backstage, and you hear that, like, awesome, like, the name of your play and the company's, like, 5-minute call, and I love all that stuff. I love the green room, I love the feeling part of a pact. I find the long solo build-up, like, quite excruciating. I don't think I could do it without knowing that you've got a big shiny show at the end. So I don't know actually how well I'd manage writing a novel personality wise, but it'd be such an, I think it's just such an achievement. I respect it so much.
Where do you start when writing a play?
Do you know what? I mean, it's been different every time for me. I wish I had more of a method. I think with the one I've just been writing at the moment, I knew I wanted to write something about an affair. I kind of knew that, and that hasn't changed. And actually, who the sort of dynamic of the ages of the affair and the genders of the affair hasn't changed either. But I've set it, it was set in, it's set now in England, and now it's set 100 years ago in a different country. So loads around that kind of world and changed. And I think I wanted to also write something about the other, like othering and the other, and they kind of sort of put them into the same play. And then, so that was like, do you know, just something like you hook on something, your brain does for whatever reason, and it might be this, like when I was describing Robin, the boy I got, the character I built the play around, I felt really haunted by him. He felt really real, and that was the hook. And in The Hotel, my fourth play, just this very clean idea of a plot break, of a power, total power shift, was the hook. And so I don't know if the hook even necessarily, and I just, even today, which is nice because I was feeling so miserable about last night. I just think I had an idea for something next, and that was a really clear image. And my second play was a very clear image as well. So I don't know if it's, I think that's the beginning. It's like just something and you're like, ooh, why do I keep coming back to that? And it's interrogating it, I guess. It's a line of inquiry around it. But like I said before, I think, and then the long drawn out process of like, write a version, take the good bits, write another version, hopefully there's some more good bits type thing.
Do you tend to do much like planning, or do you just start to write and see where you go?
Both. This one's four acts of continuous time, so a degree of planning is essential because of having to get everyone on and off stage is a nightmare in real time and engineer your plot. It's kind of like writing your hands tied behind your back. I make it all look like, you know, people are just popping outside for a cigarette, not because it's really important conversations about to happen, that kind of thing. That has to be planned. But I think the ideal scenario when you're planning a draft or whatever is like you want, like, it's almost like you're in a jungle and there's a rope. And you want there to be a rope that gets you through the jungle. But the ropes, because I think you need to have a vague way out of the jungle. Otherwise, I think you could write yourself into a real hole and get a bit confused. But the rope, I'm going with this metaphor, the rope is slack enough for you to take a slightly different route if you want, but you'll know that it'll, if you do follow it, it'll get you out. But it's almost by knowing that there's a way through that you can relax enough to try out other stuff. And I don't think you should be too prescriptive, but I think having a vague way through is actually a way to be more creative when you're in it. I think if you don't, it's hard to get to the end. And I do really think like starting and finishing is the key thing. I think we must have lost some incredible writers along the way because they lost confidence halfway through, or they just go, all their lives didn't allow it or whatever. I think it's like, yeah, resting in the uncertainty of knowing that it might, bits of it might be really shit, but you did it, and then
do you have like exercises that you use if you have like creative blocks, or do you have like ways that you motivate yourself to keep writing, or is that like never really an issue?
Well, I'm working with the director at the moment in a slightly unusual way on a different thing, where it's him and there's an actress and him and I, and they've kind of approached me to kind of write something for her, which is actually the really old school way of doing it. That's how it was done back in the day, but it's really unusual now. And he's been setting me these tasks, which kind of patronisingly he calls my homework. I know, right? I feel like I should say something, but it's all got a bit weird. I just want to be like, you're not my real dad. There's this misogyny, there really is. Like, you know, a young woman playwright, older male director, I mean, you're still, it's a bit like, I'm just accepting this whole like homework business, but actually it's a bit weird and creepy. And I think I hate you. but weirdly, I'm not really doing the work. It's weird. Anyway, so he's setting me my fucking homework. But like these short little challenges, and is pushing me to do them. So like I had to write like a rant about like, it was like denial or something. And I wrote this like, and it was quite sketchy doing it because that's not normally how I work. But I just had to sit down and just write this rant. It was on my case and send it to him. It felt exposing and weird and horrible. And then he was like, a few days later, just like, write the response. I was like, okay, and I did. And then he was like, okay, write what those two characters say to each other. And actually that bit of the episode I didn't like. But I think actually something like that is quite good to just sort of shake you up a bit, because you don't know what might come out. And I found that when I had to write this rant, I literally only had an hour to do it because I was on deadlines for this other play. I sort of warmed up. I find that's quite helpful, where you like sit down at the computer and instead of going like straight into the scene, it kind of looks like the gibberings of a madwoman, but if you just sort of type whatever's in your head and like repeat words, or just, it's like, it's also, you know, keyboard, and you know, it's a bit, I like to think it's a bit like playing the piano. You know, you're like, you've got, you're getting your hands and brain are kind of connecting, and you're just sort of scrapping around a bit, and it just, it's almost this like psychic kind of discharge comes out, and you just sort of, and actually through that I sort of got the germs for the weird little rant. And then that's led to another thing. So I think I think doing something quite short form that you set yourself or whatever can be great. I find music brilliant. I write a lot to music, I could play music really loudly. I find it's a really good sort of emotional shortcut. You need to like get into the sort of place and you start to associate a song with that place or that character or that play. It can just take you there and rev you up a bit and sort of it's more fun and you're like, oh, I don't know, makes it sort of some other part of your brain I think gets activated, I'm sure it does. So yeah, that kind of thing. But music definitely helps. It could, if I'm getting a bit bored and like, God, I do, like from day, hour seven, like fiddling with the speech and you're just like, oh, I hate this. And you're like, no, that's really sad if you hate this. Like, you can't hate this, you're really lucky to be doing this. And then you're like, oh, it's the whole thing spirals when you put on like a track and you're like, oh no. Sort of perks you up a bit, maybe.
Do you ever struggle with originality in terms of you see an idea and then realise you've got it directly from somewhere else?
Oh my God, I thought that I had come up with the idea of the musical. I was like listening to like the White Stripes or something, it was years ago, and I was walking down the street and I was like, music? Like they should just play this music and people should just like do a play. Like, oh my God, that would be amazing. And it took me like 20 seconds to be like, that's a musical. But I was like, I am sorted. This is just the best thing ever. So yeah, definitely. And also, I mean, I also find I lines from previous plays like pop up in new work. But I think that's healthy. I think that's all right. I think that's your play leaning on your other play a little bit in a way that's all right and good. But totally. And it's also really when you see a play when you're like, fuck, I wish I wrote that. You're like, oh God, so annoying. But I think there's so many. I think we're living in such a changing time. And I think the internet, I think technology, I think we're living in a really, really interesting time. I think actually there's a lot of originality up for grabs with writing about the world we're in now. So I think, but yeah, I do struggle too.
Would you ever want to write a musical?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it a little bit with a friend of mine. They are legendarily impossible. People are like, because it's called writing the book, isn't it? When you write the book and they write the songs. Like it's legendarily really difficult, but I'd love to one day. And also like write a hit musical, sorted, literally forever. Like that's what you want to. That's where all the money is, I think, really. And how fun, big shiny musical. But I don't see that happening for a little while. But yeah, I'd love to.
Do you find it hard to like give up your plays to the actors and directors that work?
Oh my God, yeah, total nightmare. Because you know you can, and it gets difficult because like once you let it go and it's like up in front of the audience, they can do whatever they want, really, and that's really annoying and quite frustrating. You end up being friends with them, and arguing, but. And also play once the director's, you know, you have all your previews, you have your press night, and then it's just kind of doing its thing, and the director's gone, and they're like, yeah, I've gone, you know, I'm not going to be there every night, maybe like once a week or something. And you come back like 2 weeks later, and the whole thing's just slid into madness. Like, people are like really going for their speeches. Like, it's kind of, it's got, the assistant director's meant to come in and give them notes every now and again, because otherwise, you know, so yeah, that's difficult for sure. But I think it is ultimately a trade-off. The moments when you see someone you think kind of murder your script are hopefully offset by moments when you see them elevate it, you know, beyond your expectations, when you see them do things with it that only really special actors can do and like make this person live and, you know, get up and, you know, do it every night for at least a month, then put their bodies through it and do all the emotion, and you know, there's such a almost like soldier-like quality, I think, to really good acting in a really intense play. So it's not been often that I've struggled. There's been more wonderful surprises, And I would take the risk of that for the collaborative aspect every time. And also, I mean, it's so amazing the moment that you sit down with a live audience and you sit down, you're sitting down in front of this like purpose-built set with these people that you've made up, dressed in the specially costume clothes that you've chosen, the names you made up, saying the things you made up. In my last play Hotel, what really blew my mind is they like monogrammed the kind of hotel, you know, like garb, like all the dressing gowns. And they were like, what's it called? I was like, oh, Hotel Eden. Next day I came in, it was just on everywhere. And I was like, it's amazing. I mean, it's probably like power or whatever it is that I like about it. But it feels like magic. It feels like your mind literally is in front of you. It exists. Your thoughts exist. Other people have labored to make them real, and you can watch it. I mean, it's all the bullshit, and there's a lot of it together. It's really hard and horrible, quite a lot of the time. Not hard and horrible, that makes me sound sorry for myself, but it's not, I do not find my job easy. I find it difficult, and I find it lonely, and I find it quite relentless at times. There are obviously flashes of like woohoo along the way, but all of it is gearing towards that moment where you sit down and you feel like magic happened and you're just watching it. So then it lives, it's insane. And you sort of fade away. So in a sense, actually the letting it go, when you become totally irrelevant to it, is when it's done. So in a way, although that moment is scary, it is also when it's real, when you've done what you needed to do, is when you let it go. Your job is finished, therefore you've achieved it. So it's, if you're happy with it, I think it's actually really freeing.
Are you active at all during the like rehearsal process?
Yes, well, that varies. If the plays, when it's a new play, and it's in London and New York, you are there all for the whole of the rehearsal, mainly because you're doing huge amounts of rewrites usually during it, and also it's you and the director making a lot of the decisions together. So like, I really like to get involved in the design and the costume, and you know, I like to be there, and if I want to like add a line or take a line away or add a bit or whatever, and it's fun. I mean, that's kind of, I mean, you know, that's sort of the fun bit, I guess. But if it's on, if that play is then, so then that first production of the play, when it's a new piece of writing, so then it gets published as it's being produced, and then it's kind of fine. It's sort of, then it might go and be on in different countries, and you might go out and see it, but you wouldn't be there for the rehearsal process for that, because the script's kind of set. But if your play is on in somewhere like New York, even though you might have done it in London, you would go out and be there the whole time, because again, it's another big production in English speaking, and it's just important to do well out there. So they're the two big cities for English speaking stuff, aren't they? So yeah, I tend to be. I mean, writers really vary though. Like, it's nice to go away in like the third or fourth week maybe for a few days, so that they don't feel you like staring at them all the time. I think that might, you know, gives everyone a bit of room. And then you start, well, part of the letting go is towards the end, you just start becoming so redundant. And like in the tech, you're just like lying on the things, eating cupcakes, just kind of being half asleep and kind of moping around because they're doing all the lighting. But that's kind of nice, sort of flopping around. But yeah. And I think it helps. I'm interested in theatre as the kind of the craft of it. I was interested in theatre before I wanted to be a playwright, so I love the kind of smell, I love the like fags at lunchtime, I love the like, you know, the big costume stores, and like, I really like the feeling of the theatre. I think they're really lovely, they're really good, they're fun places, I think, to hang out.
So when you kind of imagine a play and you have this idea, do you see it more kind of from the perspective of an audience member kind of watching a play, or do you see the story unfold for you as a sort of unit in itself?
It's really weird. I was thinking about that the other day. Someone asked me that the other day. It's really weird. I see it as like, I'll be aware of the stage I'm writing for. So to a degree, I am imagining that room, because obviously all stages of different theatres, slightly different shapes and sizes and stuff. So you're, you know, I'm conceiving it for that space. So I'm sort of watching it like it's a, but it's like my head in 10 minutes of thinking about a scene flits between these like three different perspectives, which actually make no sense together, but are kind of mad. So you'd be watching it like you're an audience member. And then I go into almost like headcam. So I'm like the character talking to the other character, but, and they sort of see their face, but not really. And then if the character, but I'm aware that I'm on a stage, but it's like, I guess I'm one of the actors, but it feels very realistic because I'm sort of up close rather than far away. And then if I imagine, you know, when you go out to the veranda and there's meant to be like the desert and the garden or whatever, then it just looks totally real in my head. So essentially when you walk into the wings, it's like the real version, the, like a film-like reality to what's meant to be outside. So it's quite weird. It's those three things are kind of happening simultaneously. I sort of see it as real. I sort of see it like I'm an actor, and I sort of see it like I'm an audience member. Yeah.
Following on from that, when you're writing, kind of, do you, how conscious are you of kind of like, I don't know, a literary tradition that you're kind of ascribing to? Kind of, because sometimes when I'm reading a play and I'm kind of, I feel as if I'm creating meaning when there is none. You know, I'm saying, oh, that choice of word is significant as well. How kind of conscious are you on like the minute details? If you're kind of thinking of an English student who's then going to be studying this play, or does it just kind of flow and then leave it to the critics to create their own meaning?
Well, you, inevitably, I mean, I've had really weird readings of the plays that were nothing to do with my intention at all. But I like to plant things. Like, I like to, like, hide things in there that, like, someone might spot and enjoy. That, and also, it's just kind of fun. Like, I tend to name characters in some way as a kind of reference or a nod to other characters and other plays that I like. Or it could be storybooks, children's storybooks, or in other pieces of art that I like. There's, like, a little, almost a kind of little, like, mini salute to something else that maybe inspired me or I've always loved. And in that way, you sort of, you hold hands with all of that, that thing of being a tradition and the individual talent, that like, that essay, you're sort of aware, I don't know, it's, it makes me feel connected to the works of art that inspire me and my work rests among. I don't know, I like it. And it, but also it's like a little treasure hunt. It's like, someone will probably never know why that person was called that person. So that I do consciously. And it's like, yeah, and I've done it in every play, and it's kind of like a thing I think I'll always do now. But I think you can't think too much about how it'll be interpreted. Because, well, I, again, this is, but then I'm, that's sort of, I guess, taste. But I think if, for me, if I think too much about what people might think about it or read into, I get a bit like tangled and tight and a bit self-conscious. And I think the best work comes from when you're like just so in it that you're not even thinking. Like that's when it's, and that's when it's really enjoyable as well, when you know you look up and it's like 2 hours have gone past. And I think that comes from almost a very childlike kind of unself-conscious, unaware, but I think that gets increasingly hard to plug into if you don't look after that. So yeah. Sorry, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Cool.
Hi. What do you find are the best ways to go back and edit your work? Like, do you rewrite passages or just tweak certain words?
Oh, God. I think if possible, like, walk away from it for at least a week, actually. Because I think it's so hard to tell when you've just done it. I think you just can't see. I think if it's a script, I really advise having it read, having a reading, which is like so painful more often than not. But you can, if it's meant to be heard, you can like hear repetition, I find, that you literally can't see on the page. You just can't see it, but you can really hear it. So I think that's really helpful for editing. I think like editing can be quite fun actually. that kind of like you feel like a mechanic, kind of just, it's like a Rubik's Cube or something, you're just sort of clicking and moving. And I mean, I can't even imagine how awful it must have been actually when you had to like do it by hand or type it up or whatever. I think when you, I think with scripts it's so wonderful, you can just drag up a sentence, drop it somewhere else, and it's so reversible, isn't it? But yeah, I think I would mainly advise definitely allowing yourself some time to have some perspective and feel less, I can feel quite kind of hot-headed about it and kind of passionate about it, maybe with not the right, I don't have enough sort of composure to make the smarter decisions, I think, when I've just finished something. You're just a bit like my child. But yeah, I think that calms down. That'd be my biggest piece of advice.
A lot of, like, I've heard a lot of writers say that you should write about what you know, like what you've experienced. Would you like agree or disagree? How's that fit into like your writing?
I think that's bullshit. I think like, well, you write what you know. It's like, you know, what is known anyway? Do you know what I mean? I think you're like, big question. But I think that, I don't know. I think that's, it's like, oh, you shouldn't write what you feel, or is feeling what you know? I just don't think anyone should feel that they don't have the authority to write about whatever they want. I think that's really important. And I think that's super creative. And I don't think any sort of, any limitations are a sort of good thing.
How do you make convincing relationships that are impossible to you? For example, a son and a mother. You don't know what a son feels like. In a different country.
I mean, writing this thing set 100 years ago has been really interesting because it's like quite clearly, I don't think that happened to me, unless past lives were a thing, are a thing, maybe now. I think it's surprising how porous the mind is, and I think how much, you know, we've all seen a lot of films and read a lot of books. I met a lot of people, and these are all portals to other people's experiences. And aren't these stories, I suppose, understanding the other mind? So I think it's really surprising what you can conjure up and kind of buy. I mean, I love writing boy parts. Just love it. I don't, maybe it's the distance, maybe it's freeing, or maybe it's because I'm not a boy, and I think maybe being a boy would be quite fun sometimes, so you sort of get to be one for a minute. I don't know. I loved writing a six-year-old boy. Loved it. Felt really natural, weirdly. So, like, I don't think worry about that. I just think wing it. I think give it a go. I think you'd be surprised at what you just know about that, about other things that aren't your experience from just watching and kind of looking at the world. I think the thing I've had to be careful of with writing something set 100 years ago is I was like, oh, 100 years ago, here we go. And you've got to be really, because again, I've seen a lot of stuff set 100 years ago, and read a lot of stuff set then. And suddenly it all comes flowing back through you, but almost you've got to be careful not to like pastiche it, for it not to be a bit sort of like, oh darling, you know. Like, there's the porous and then there's almost too porous. Do you know what I mean? There's a line between the two, so not like aping what you've seen or pastiching it, but also actually letting it kind of filter through you and come out as your voice. But I think it's, again, it's that question of limitations. I don't think any, you know, it's extremely liberating to write not from your own perspective. I think perhaps part of my urge to write comes from the desire to understand behaviour that I don't. Certain cruelty that I don't, you know, I think a lot of my posts do with cruelty, and I think my investigation of it through my work is because of really wanting to understand certain actions. And I think you can get a really incredible, I don't know, sort of a peace maybe from standing in a vicious person's shoes for a minute. I don't know. Just don't boundary, I think.
We have maybe two more questions.
You obviously wrote your first play when you were very young. How much did you know about plays and playwriting at that stage? And
what would you say would be the most talked about plays that you wish you'd written? Which would be the ones, you know, that you'd say that you'd written?
The plays I wish I'd written. I really wish I wrote People, Places and Things. Did anyone see that? I know Duncan, and it just so good. I thought it was just amazing. And it was like all up my alley with all the subject. I loved all of it. Just wish I'd written it. Wish I'd written it. It's so brilliant. What wishing you'd written something is just, it's just massive respect, isn't it? The list is kind of endless. But I think the first sort of bit of your question of saying, you know, not knowing that much about that stuff when I was younger, I think something really formative is I went to loads and loads of theatre from a really young age with my dad, and was lucky enough to grow up in London, and he was brilliant. He took me to see all like Fringe, like I was going to like the Bush and like upstairs at the Royal Court, and you know, to quite kind of hardcore new writing from a really young age, just because he liked to go, and he worked out that I did too, so I was just sort of dragged along, and it became our thing, and it was, you know, like you might, so it's like your hobby, the thing you do with your dad. And I can see, I now know retrospectively, and there was no pressure in any way to, I mean, he wasn't in the business or anything. It was not, it had no agenda apart from enjoying ourselves. But I see now that that was really, that was the game changer, I think. Because it was a sort of unofficial education, really varied and interesting and quite challenging stuff from a young age. And you just absorb it when you're a kid, don't you? Or sort of adolescent. So I think reading plays and going, I think that's, you learn more sometimes from a play you don't like as well, I think.
This kind of flips back the last couple of questions, but do you ever recognise aspects of anyone you know in the characters?
Aspects of
people you know.
Yeah, I think inevitably. But what's really funny is when people think that they're in it and they're not. As well, like in my third play, there was a character that everyone thought was a certain friend of mine. I was like, no, man. They just both have the same colour hair. That was like okay, they look a bit alike now, but like, no. Yeah, I think inevitably, I think what's weird is you see a lot of your, of like fragmented different parts of you in different ones in a kind of opposition with each other. And that's quite weird. I think different bits of you end up in them. But yeah, I think inevitably, I don't know, people inspire you, don't they? They capture your imagination. I always think it's such a sort of loving thing to end up in someone's work.
Okay, we'll take a pause there. You're all free to hang out, of course. I'm not trying to rush anybody off, but I'm conscious of time. Can we please say thank you to Polly for coming all the way.